This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for thinking of the people of Oklahoma City and its surrounding communities today. These are places I know well. On April 19, 1995, I flew on a chartered network jet into a stormy Oklahoma City hours after the bombing of the federal building by Timothy McVeigh, a terrorist attack that killed 168 people, injured more than 650. It seemed then, as now, that the city was just too small to absorb such a blow. And almost exactly 4 years later, on May 4, 1999, I flew in another chartered jet into Oklahoma City through serious jaw-dropping turbulence hours after a series of tornadoes of force 3, 4, and 5 clawed through the metro area, flattening block after block. I saw nails sucked through 2-inch boards, splintered houses, concrete foundations that looked as though they'd been polished clean by some kind of machine. I saw the faces of grieving families. 5 people died then, more than 100 were injured. Then, as now, it seemed these communities were just too small. Moore, Shawnee, Newcastle, Bridge Creek, too small to absorb the blow. And now this, on a scale far beyond what folks saw in 1999, a persistent pattern of storms that was already deadly 2 days ago, and then yesterday it turned into a powerful cluster of tornadoes never before seen here, carving a huge path of destruction near to where the 1999 storms passed, a step back into grief for the people of Oklahoma City, an 18-year-long journey for so many of these folks, a terror and grief revisited today.
Please know that we're working as quickly as we can. There are a tremendous amount of people that are helping. For those who aren't involved in rescue operations, please stay away from the immediate vicinity. Early in the afternoon, when I saw the tornado hitting this area, I called out 80 of our National Guard members to come and help secure the perimeters and to also help our highway patrol with our traffic congestion on our highways and to secure the areas that have been affected.
Dealing with the grief and the chaos, that's Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon responding to a disaster that began days ago in infrastructure that has crumbled.
Right now, there's power out to about 39,000 people still in the area across the state, and water is an issue in that area, as well as phone service.
That's Nate Webb of the Oklahoma Office of Emergency Management. The witnesses describe what they've seen in a tone that really conveys they still can barely believe it.
Well, a tornado just hit a few minutes ago. It was very close by. I don't know if you can see this, but here's a truck that is just completely wrapped around a tree. The truck is folded over like a spoon. Apparently they're hearing some voices from underneath.
That man came from a neighboring town to help people with the wreckage in Moore, Oklahoma, destroyed once again, a community where the schools were in harm's way, and that may be where the grief and loss may end up being the greatest.
The tornado went in, and I was so afraid that I was hanging on to one of the desks, and then I fell back, and then all the dirt started getting in my eyes and all my clothes.
That unidentified child speaking to KWTV was in school when the tornado hit. 2 schools in Moore are completely destroyed. Pictures very upsetting. Eradicated neighborhoods, 10 and 20 blocks square, homes, buildings, schools, ground to rubble. A lot of our listeners have reached out. Mel wrote on our Facebook page, "Everyone is numb here. We're 100 miles away, praying for everyone who is affected by severe weather in the past few days." Eric told us, "Finally heard from my aunt and cousin. My cousin lost some windows, but my aunt's house is almost completely gone." And of course, we are praying for all of the folks, our listeners, people who have contacted us, people who have been lucky and others not so lucky. Joining us now, Rachel Hubbard, Associate Director at KOSU. She joins us from Oklahoma City. Rachel, numb is a word we could use to describe today.
It is. It's a very surreal scene. I've seen tornado damage before, but this is unlike anything that I've ever seen.
And you visited one of the schools in Moore that was completely devastated. Describe that scene.
Well, it took us quite some time to get there yesterday after the tornado. But when we finally arrived, you couldn't even tell that this was a school. The playground equipment was crumpled beyond recognition. The houses closest to Plaza Towers Elementary School were wiped clean off the foundation. The only thing that was left were water pipes that were still spewing water because the city hadn't had time to turn it off yet. And people were just standing outside of this makeshift caution tape that was put up with splinters of houses. That was what it was tied to, and the corner of a beam that had been, a steel beam that had been ripped out of the elementary school and jammed into the ground by the force of the tornado. And it looked like the school had been bombed, and firefighters were pulling rocks out one at a time and passing them down a line, just trying to get to the people who are still trapped.
And did you see any reunions, people recognizing each other? Part of what's so disorienting is not only do you not know where you are, people are unrecognizable after all of this devastation.
Well, it was just an insane scene, and I don't trying to give people a way to understand it. It looks like a zombie movie. People are just walking around, sort of with these blank stares. Some of them are dragging small suitcases along behind them, and they have their pets on leashes. And this is literally all that is left of their lives.
And these are the lucky ones.
These are the lucky ones. They're continuing to pull survivors out of storm shelters that are so buried by rubble that they don't even know that these storm shelters that many people put in their garages are even exist. So they're continuing to look for those. And then there is this elementary school, which is the epicenter of the devastation.
I've heard, again, the numbers are moving all over the map here, but you know, more than 100 pulled alive over the last 18 hours or so. How are you doing, Rachel?
Well, it's as I sat with my husband last night attempting to eat dinner late in the night, it was we just talked about trying to come back to reality because the scene was so horrific that I really had no way to process the information that I had seen. And it's hard for us coming in as people who don't live in that neighborhood, and it's even harder for the people who are there and they're disoriented and they have no idea what has just happened.
Well, I can still remember walking those streets of Moore, Oklahoma, back in 1999 and seeing just the street signs. Rachel Hubbard is Associate Director at KOSU, speaking to us from Oklahoma City. Rachel, stay with us. We're going to bring Pastor Ben Glover, a minister at the Oak Crest Church of Christ in Oklahoma City. Pastor, welcome. Are you there?
I am. Thank you very much.
You've been really, I mean, all the churches in the communities there become first responders, in a sense, opening your doors. So what's going on there at the church?
You're absolutely right. It's wonderful to see everybody pulling together and all the different churches just reaching out. Here at Oak Crest, we have opened our doors really to kind of short-term, long-term goals. Short-term, we have folks who are coming in who just need water, food, shelter. We processed about 60, 70 folks yesterday looking for information, looking for those basic needs, trying to find a place to land. Last night we had about 20 folks who stayed the night, folks who had no home to go back to. So kind of our short-term goals are to reach those needs. Long-term goals are to help them over the next weeks and months to kind of put their lives back together.
I can hear that your phone is working. That's something to be grateful for, Pastor Glover. Our colleague Rachel Hubbard was describing just how much seeing the school in Moore has affected her, trying to figure out a way of processing what's going on with her and with the others in the community. I wonder if you could give her a little help here. She's on the line with us.
Sure. One of the wonderful things of being back here and working on this side of it and not being in the middle of it is hearing the phone calls. One of the things that I would process is, as much devastation as we have seen yesterday, all day long we kept receiving calls from our city, our state, the country, and even internationally. People calling and saying, hey, we want to help. We want to send this, or do you need workers or money, or what can we do to help? And it does bring you back to reality, as Rachel said. It helps to kind of center you that, as devastating as this is to humanity, there's also really incredibly good folks out there who really care and who want to reach out to these families that are numb and lost and hurting. And so there's wonderful places. Oakcrest here is doing it, but there's churches and organizations all around those folks. And our prayer is that they'll just be able to reach out and find the emotional and psychological, spiritual, physical needs that they need met. There are folks who are just waiting, literally looking for something to do. So it's such a good feeling to know that it's not all just hopeless. We hurt for those with loss, and especially those who don't even know right now whether their homes are there or not. And we know that's a tragedy, and we really hurt for them. But they're not alone, and there are resources and folks ready and waiting to make a difference in their lives.
Rachel, are you hearing that message? And describe for us for a moment to just how experienced the Emotional Response Network is there in Oklahoma City.
Well, it was so wonderful yesterday across from the school just to be able to share in a positive emotion. They had searched the remnants of these homes for hours and hours, and there was a couple there, and they had been away at work, and their dog was left behind in the home. And after hours, when it seemed hopeless, the little dog was found, and it had climbed behind the couch. And everybody that was in that neighborhood clapped and cheered, and we cried together and hugged. And it was a small amount of joy in the middle of complete devastation. And it was, you know, even compared to moments of joy that are of great magnitude, that thing that probably in comparison was considerably small was the most joy that the people around me and I, when we talked about it, said that we had experienced in quite some time.
Pastor Glover, what's the concern going forward over the next several days as the continuing needs of the community compound?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great question. I think so often what happens in situations like this is we get a good spotlight, and again, I will say I appreciate so much the media for doing a great job of spotlighting our little corner of the world. This is a tragedy, and this is a huge need, but obviously that spotlight can't stay there forever. There'll be other things going on in the world that need also to be seen and witnessed. Our problem here will be folks will need to put their lives together and put their homes, lives, and families back together, and that will take weeks, months, maybe years. And so it's an ongoing process. So we know as churches and organizations in this area, because of May of 1999, that this is a process and a journey. And so you take it a step at a time, and we have the resources, the people lining up. And so you begin with the basic needs, and you know the power companies are out there and the water company, and then you move into helping folks rebuild. It's just a step-by-step process, and it really takes a whole community. And this is a great community. It's strong. It's vibrant. It shows that it can bounce back. And there are a lot of people here who really want to help. So, you know, we really look forward to the rebuild. Again, hurt for those who are hurting today, because there's just, you know, there are folks out there who've been devastated, and there will be no easy way today. But we just pray and hope in the future that maybe we can be a part of the healing process.
Well, Pastor Glover, thanks so much. Minister at Oakcrest Church of Christ in Oklahoma City, just north of Moore, Oklahoma. Rachel Hubbard, you take care now.
Thank you.
Rachel Hubbard is Associate Director at KOSU, speaking to us from Oklahoma City. We're on this. You know how you can reach us, 877-8-MY-TAKE. Stay with us here on The Takeaway. We return now to the recovery in Oklahoma City and the communities of Grady, Cleveland, and McLean counties. They're all devastated. The rescue is still going on. The task of rebuilding continuing. For a better sense of the emergency response in a situation like this, we turn to someone experienced in disaster relief, Garrett Ingolia, Vice President of Emergency Response at AmeriCares. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, John.
What's the scale of this disaster? And we're starting to see it, but the aerial pictures really only tell part of the story.
Yeah, it's devastating, and as you say, we're still learning more about the true extent of the destruction, but it is truly a devastating event. A huge storm, you know, almost 2 miles wide, winds in excess of 200 miles an hour. You hear the death tolls climbing. It's truly a massive, catastrophic event.
And it's going to take days for any of those numbers to settle down to what we will know as the history of this devastating storm. In terms of the forces at work here, I remember the 1999 event that had force fives, force fours, force threes. It was a series of a cluster of tornadoes. This is a cluster, but it's also a string of storms that's been going on for days.
Yeah, so it's been a very calm tornado season up until the last 48 hours, and then as we've seen, it's been terrible in Kansas and Missouri and Oklahoma, and then especially this one very severe tornado that swept through Newcastle and more in the Oklahoma City area. And this is, you know, certainly the worst tornado since the 2011 season, which was historic.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the unique problems in this community. The transportation disruption has made the rescue and recovery effort and simply getting people to hospitals a real challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. The debris that's blocking roads is a serious problem. The fact that the Moore Medical Center has been damaged and people have been evacuated is a real serious issue. And just the number of homes that have been destroyed, the extent of the damage, it all adds up to a very difficult situation. And the winds are so strong that it's very difficult to get people out of the rubble, and there's real concern that, that people in there are not going to be able to survive. So it is a unique set of challenges. I mean, if you look at the aerial footage, you'll see just wide swaths of these communities that are just destroyed, and as you say, roads that are impassable. So it's going to be a real challenge to help the victims and then to deal with all of the people who have been displaced, who are injured, who need to be transported to hospitals in other communities. And that's just sort of the immediate response. As you know, in these types of events, there are longer-term issues that, that we have to deal with, both in terms of health issues, rebuilding of homes, relocating people, and then the mental health effects of a storm like this, particularly for, say, the children in those schools that experience that horror.
Remind us of some of the impacts and recovery efforts that are going to be of a long-term nature for AmeriCares. And again, remind us that part of the mental health trauma for a community like this is that the effect of a storm of this power almost literally erases the community. People are so disoriented, they have no idea what street they're even standing on anymore.
Absolutely. So we're concerned particularly, obviously, about the people that are injured by the storm, but also about the disruption to the healthcare system. You've got people who have chronic diseases, chronic illnesses that rely on, you know, taking medicine every day, or they rely on assistive technology to get around, and they may have lost that medicine or lost access to those health services. In the coming days and weeks, you're going to see that as a mounting problem. In terms of mental health issues, studies have shown that, that one in four children that have been exposed to a trauma like a disaster such as this can experience post-traumatic stress symptoms months and years after the event. So that's another area that needs to be addressed, and we need there need to be interventions so that children can develop the coping skills to deal with this trauma.
So a disaster really compounded hour by hour as the needs of the community are clear and have to be met and become more and more urgent, both the people who are directly affected and those who are affected by the loss of infrastructure. Garrett Ingolia, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Garrett Ingolia is Vice President of Emergency Response from AmeriCares.